So our summer reading of the stories of Abraham's family continue, bringing us to his grandson, the youngest son of Isaac and Rebekah. And as we explore this story, I'd like you to do some theological work of your own, holding the parable that Jesus told us today in mind, and thinking about the ways in which the wheat and the weeds, the good crop and the destructive one, are interwoven in Jacob, and in you, and in me, and indeed in all the world, all of which are fully known by God, and nonetheless fully beloved by God. So we actually met Jacob last week, fighting with his brother while they were still in their mother Rebekah's womb. And Jacob came into the world hanging on to his brother's heel. This just barely older brother was born red and hairy, and so was named Esau, apparently a word which shares etymological roots with the word covered. So he was named for how he looked. Jacob's name means grasping at the heel, supplanting, identifying him not by how he looks, but by his particular relationship with his brother, perhaps reflecting a particular relationship with the rest of the world, too. For Jacob, it turns out, is clever, maybe too clever, and ambitious, maybe too ambitious, and charming, maybe too charming, and he has a lot to learn. So the boys grow up, and we have no stories of their childhood, but I can well imagine what that household might have been like. And each of the boys had a parent on their side. Esau the hunter was Isaac's favorite. Jacob the farmer was Rebekah's. And it would seem that their relationship had not improved over the years, and Jacob was still reaching for his brother's place. As we heard in last week's story, Jacob refused to give Esau any food when he returned famished from an unsuccessful hunting trip, until Esau agreed to pay him with his birthright, the material and social inheritance of the firstborn son. Esau is a whole other field of wheat and weeds, but he does not feature in today's story, so we're just going to set him aside. And it would appear that Jacob and his mother, it must be acknowledged, were not satisfied with the birthright. The story that comes between last week's reading and this Sunday's reading tells of Isaac's last days and Rebekah and Jacob's successful scheme to trick Isaac, now blind and dying and apparently quite easily fooled, into bestowing his blessing upon Jacob rather than Esau. Isaac is heartbroken, and Esau is enraged, vowing to kill Jacob after their father's death. Rebekah hears of the vow and sends Jacob running to her brother's home in Haran, where he is to find a wife and wait for his mother's call to return. And this is where we rejoin Jacob, en route to his uncle's. I wonder how he is feeling. Scared? Clever? Guilty? Triumphant? Sad? Powerful? All of the above, perhaps. A potent stew of emotions and uncertainty and plans. Night comes, and he lies down in that certain place with a stone under his head, and he sleeps. And in his sleep, he encounters God for the first time, as far as our stories tell us. And it is, I think, significant that this encounter is God-instigated rather than sought out by Jacob. You might imagine that Jacob would have gone looking for God that night, crying out for forgiveness or for protection or for guidance. You might imagine that Jacob lay down with a deep sense of his reliance on God, the one who had first given the blessing to Abraham and which Jacob now carried. But it seems he did not, at least not as a top-of-mind kind of thing. Perhaps you can relate. Maybe not to the specifics of Jacob's situation, but to the experience of being, of God being a background thought at best, to being so wrapped up in the chaos of your life or the turmoil of your own thoughts and emotions, or so focused on the working out of your own plans that God just doesn't really factor in, not as an active partner anyways. But fortunately for Jacob, God decided it was time to remind Jacob that he was not, in fact, on his own. And so Jacob had a dream. And in that dream, he saw that heaven and earth are not so far removed from one another that there is no connection. The two are, in fact, joined, connected by a constant stream of God's messengers ascending and descending back and forth, keeping heaven and earth in constant contact. As we joined the psalmist in singing this morning, there is nowhere God is not, nowhere God does not see. And so God saw Jacob. God knew Jacob inside and out, good and bad, and God desired to be in touch with Jacob, whether he was deserving or not, whether he was looking for it or not. Jacob's obliviousness to the presence of God in that place, or indeed in his whole life, his obliviousness to his need for God rather than relying only on his own cunning, did not overrule God's desire or overpower God's reach. Perhaps you can relate. Maybe you too have been surprised by God showing up in spite of your own lack of holiness or worthiness or even interest. Maybe you too have found yourself in a place where the distance between heaven and earth is revealed to be less than you had assumed. A thin place, as Celtic spirituality calls it. And perhaps you too have discovered that God is seeking you, whether or not you are seeking God. And so God comes to Jacob in the dream and bestows on him the blessing that had already been given to his grandfather and his father before him, enfolding him in the same promise, the same covenantal relationship. Your descendants will be many and will dwell on this land, and I will be with them, and they will be a blessing to the nations. And Jacob wakes up, newly aware of God's presence, and he marks the place and names it Bethel, the house of God. But even newly aware of God's presence, Jacob is still Jacob, still grasping, still negotiating, still jockeying for position. He doesn't just embrace the blessing, doesn't just give himself to this God who has offered God's self to him. Instead, he makes a vow, committing himself to God only if God follows through on the promises just made. If these things come to pass, then I will give myself and a tenth of all I own to this God who claims me for God's own. It seems odd that even after that dream, Jacob would still feel the need for more evidence, would need to issue this test. But then maybe it isn't a test for God. Maybe it was actually a test for himself. Because maybe Jacob is unsure that his dream is reliable, unsure of whether or not he can trust his own experience of God, that it really was God speaking and not his own wishful thinking. Perhaps you can relate. Maybe you too have found yourself bargaining with God, placing conditions on your commitment. Or maybe you have found it hard to trust your own experiences of God, second-guessing yourself, and so second-guessing God, and holding back from embracing the gift of faith you have been given, from embracing the call that has been placed upon you. Well, fortunately for Jacob, his story doesn't end here, even though our assigned reading does. And so in the interest of time, I will jump to the point. Whatever was being tested, whether it was God or Jacob's experience of God, the test was passed. And Jacob, after many years of conflict and learning and building and scheming and repenting and scheming some more, eventually returned home and did give himself to God. We'll hear that story in a couple of weeks, so bookmark it. But this turn towards God, which was not a once and for all kind of turn, it must be acknowledged, did not come about primarily because Jacob had a good long think and reformed his scheming ways. And it wasn't because Jacob put in the work and developed spiritual discipline to become deeply attuned to God's presence, or because Jacob had learned humility and the virtue of self-giving, although maybe he did all of those things to varying degrees. But it was fundamentally because God was willing to wait for the grain to ripen before worrying about the weeds, willing to give Jacob the time he needed to learn and grow, the freedom to make mistakes and to suffer and to succeed. It was because God, who knows our sitting down and our rising up, who discerns our thoughts from afar and is present to us wherever, whenever, and however we are. Because this God is generous and patient, faithful and trustworthy, characteristics that, fortunately for Jacob and for all of us, do not rely on anyone other than God. And so we can join the psalmist in confident and trusting prayer. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. See if there is any wickedness in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Amen.